Okay, here we go, everybody. Now, I want to start off this session with a story. I think there's a lot of us in here have sponsored people who have come to us and said, I'm in a relationship. I've just met somebody. And we all go, oh, no. Yeah. Doug is absolutely right. God needs to be the arbiter of our sexual conduct, not us or, you know, I mean, we can give people advice and everything, but we're not the ultimate authority. But here's a story. This young woman goes up to her sponsor and she says, you know, I've got almost a year now. And I haven't been dating, and I'd really like to start getting involved in dating. And, you know, there's a couple of guys that I'm interested in. What do you think? Now, as a good sponsor, a lot of good sponsors go to the book, which is what you should do for advice like this. So most of the sex advice is on page 69, ironically enough, okay? So the sponsor says, well, go home and read page 69. So on the way home, the new sponsee, the new girl, gets the numbers confused. And instead of going home and opening up the big book at page 69, she opens it up at page 96 and she starts to read. And Doug will read starting at the top of page 96.
Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out other alcoholics and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept you with eagerness. What you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowships failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. That's good. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered.
It goes on and on. It goes, he may be broke or homeless. Yeah, yeah. So this poor woman got the advice she needed, I guess. Oh, man. Okay, we're on step five. Step five starts.
Chapter six, out. Into action, page 72.
Page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our fingers on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth chapter. And it says this is perhaps difficult, some of us. I would say, I mean, I don't know about anybody else in here, but they told me never admit anything, even if they got you on video. You know? Always play dumb. So when I saw that it was going to be an actual step to, like, admit this stuff, it was not the greatest. I'll tell you, my first sponsor, God bless him, was a fellowship sponsor. And, you know, everyone back in these days, when I first got sober, were fellowship sponsors. And, you know, if you were to raise your hand in a four-step meeting and say, well, how exactly do you do a four-step? You were likely to get, kid, you do a four-step with a pencil. Well, thanks for that, you know. That really answers all of my questions. And you used to get answers like that from the cranky old-timers because they didn't really know how to do a four-step, actually. You know, you find that out after you gain a little experience. Anyway, I did the best I could with the four-step the first time I did it. And for better or worse, it was what I knew at that time, you know, putting together the things that I knew at that time. And now it was time to go do a fifth step with someone, my sponsor. And so he goes, okay, come on over and we're going to go take a ride and we're going to go down to the park. There was this place called Lewis Morris Park near where I live. Very beautiful, a lot of trails through the woods. And, you know, and he brings his dogs, and I'm thinking this is like going to be like, well, he's doing this because it's kind of a spiritual thing, you know, be out in the woods, a holistic experience. He's doing it because he needed to take his dogs for a walk. And he was killing two birds with one stone. But anyway, we get out there, and I've got this thing that I've been hiding under the spare tire of my car for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, waiting to get a chance to do a fist step with this guy. And it's the whole Megillah. You know, I mean, it's everything I could put together about the patheticness of Chris. You know, how small I was, how tragic my life was, the things that I had done wrong. And I just had it all in this one volume. And again, this is the best I could do at that time. And we started to take a walk, and I started to read this thing. And I mean, as I was reading it, I was just so filled with I was just so ashamed of myself, you know, just so ashamed. And as I'm reading this, it started to dawn on me that this isn't really that bad. You know, I'm reading it, I'm sharing it with a person, and he's nodding, you know, like, you know, he's turning his head to yawn, you know, so I wouldn't see him. And all this stuff. But he gets to the point where I'm done, and he looks at me and he goes, you know, Chris, here's what I believe about you. He goes, let's say you're a campfire and all the coals are like burning, but you know, they're like glowing. They're like glowing embers in this campfire. And you know, let's picture you as that campfire. And then all of a sudden alcohol comes along. It's like taking gasoline and throwing it on that smoldering campfire. All of a sudden it flares up and it burns anybody that's near it. That's what your alcoholism was. You were a pre-alcoholic. You had all the characteristics of alcoholism. When you discovered alcohol, boom, you flared up and you harmed the people closest to you. That's kind of what we do. Chris, this is an illness, he said. This is an illness. This is something that once you get caught up in it, you're powerless over it until you're exposed to the recovery process, until you're exposed to AA. You know, give yourself a break. You know, he wasn't cutting me slack on what I did. He was just telling me that I shouldn't be suffering about all of this stuff because it is an illness. It is an illness. And one of the symptoms of the illness is parking on people's lawns or vomiting on people's brand new carpet, you know, or forgetting your date at the prom and taking off with the boys, you know, or all these things that I was constantly doing, you know. I mean, I was, and he gave me a little bit of slack. He cut me a little bit of bail on being an alcoholic. And I walked away from that fifth step feeling okay. I mean, it was the first time. I always thought I was a scumbag. You know what I mean? Not a run-of-the-mill scumbag. I was a special scumbag. I wasn't just any old scumbag. I had, like, special scumbag qualities. Don't put me in with all the rest of the scumbag. I'm a scumbag, but don't put me in with the crowd. I'm different. But I always thought that I was a scumbag. And walking away from this experience, I really got to the point where I realized that I wasn't. I was not. I actually had good. I had good intentions, and I had a good heart. And I suffered when I did things wrong. I had a conscience. You know, evil people are able to shut their consciences off. I've never met an evil alcoholic. I really haven't, because we suffer from what we do, and then we drink more because we suffer, and then we cause more problems, and then we feel even worse, so we drink even more. You know, and we're caught up in this crazy cycle of pathetic addictive behavior. That's an alcoholic. You know, we're not evil people. We're good people that do bad things, and we're smart people that do stupid things. We do really, really stupid things. One of the stupid things that I did back when I was drinking was You have DWIs here, right? Driving while intoxicated, and they don't, the cops don't like that here too. I mean, the cops don't like that, you know, where I come from. And I had three DWIs. And I was getting my driver's license back from a third DWI, and I had to go to Motor Vehicle Bureau. Now, I didn't do real well with Motor Vehicle Bureau and the bright fluorescent lights and the standing in line and the authority and the people telling me what to do. You know, having a, you know, I hated it all. So I took a couple of drinks, you know, and I drove to this place to get my license back for a third. I'd been walking for years. I drove to this place to get my license back and I'm indignant. You know how we're resentful at authority, you know? You know how we, because I tried 100 different ways to get my license back, like, illegally. And I just, they caught me every time. So I actually had to do what they asked me to do. So I'm indignant. I walk in there and I go, okay. I go to this woman who's got to take all my paperwork and then give me a slip to go downstairs to get my license. And I go, I got this. And I got this. And this is notarized and this is signed and here's my money for this. And she stops me, and she leans forward, and she starts sniffing me. She's going, and I'm like, you know, and she goes, have you been drinking? I go, no. And she looks at my records, and she goes, you're getting your license back for a third DWI, and you came here drunk? I'm like, no. And she has to give me this slip. I mean, you know, I've got all my ducks in a row. She's got to give me this slip. And she hands it to me. And she hands me this thing. And I grab it. And she's not letting go. I'm like, she's trying to protect society from me. And she goes, did you drive here? And I'm like, no. You know, and so I go through the woods and do all these cutbacks to get back around my car. Now think about how stupid it is to get drunk and then go get your license back for a third DWI. I mean, on a level of stupidness, that's right there at the top. Now, you know, I'm a smart guy. I had millions of these. And I never wanted to share them with anybody because I was so ashamed of them. You know, nowadays they don't hold that power over me anymore. I'm not like, ooh, you know, when I think about something. You ever get those? Like you're walking down the road and then you think about some tragically pathetic thing that you did and you go like, ooh. I mean, I don't have any more of those. I've shared them all. I've given them to God. I've done my amends. I don't have any of those anymore. Thank God. They used to drive me crazy because, you know, the little shame episodes or whatever you want to call them. Now, I've done a lot of fifth steps. Let me tell you about one of my last ones. I did the resentment inventories. I did the fear inventories. There's very little sex conduct stuff that hits anymore. But I had some resentments and I had some fears. Not many, but I had some. And I went and I shared this with my sponsor. And he, at the end, he goes, hey, Chris, do you see what I see? I go, what do you mean? He goes, do you see that every single one of your resentments and every single one of your fears relates to your job? And I go, yeah, I'm seeing that now. I mean, I didn't see it. One of the jobs as a sponsor or the person hearing the fifth step is to help you recognize these patterns because sometimes we just don't see them. And here's what he did. He looked me right in the face and he goes, Chris, the next time we're doing this, the next time I'm hearing a fifth step, I don't want to hear anything about your job. I want you to take care of this stuff. Obviously, you're in the wrong job. Obviously, you're unhappy. There's a lot of things going on here that just aren't right. What are you doing? What are you doing? And he woke me up. He woke me up. And within 6 months, I had a job I went from a civil service type job where you punched the time card and you couldn't get fired if you brought in a handgun and shot off a couple rounds at your boss. You couldn't get fired. It was just one of those jobs. But it was just driving me out of my mind because to be ambitious, they'd see ambition on you and they'd squash you. You know, he's ambitious! Get him! You know what I mean? He worked an extra minute, slash his tires. I mean, It was like one of these atmospheres that was just, you couldn't ever, everything was on seniority. And it was just nuts. And they hated you. And it was just it was a bad job for somebody like me. So I left that job and I went to a job where I'd actually have to work, which was kind of scary. I had to overcome that fear. You know, it was one way it was described early on is the alcoholic is really afraid of change. We're afraid of change. It's almost like imagine being in a cesspool with the cesspool water right up to just below your nose. Okay. And somebody walks over and say, "Hey, you want a hand out?" And you go, "No, just don't make any waves." You know, somebody say, "Come on, I'll help you. I'll help you out of that cesspool you're in." No, just don't make it worse. I mean, you know, that's what we're like sometimes because of fear. We're afraid to change. I was in a cesspool and the water was almost up to my nose and I was afraid to leave that job, you know, and I left that job and I went to something much better. And then I left that job and I went to something much better. And then I left that job. Now I don't care. I'll leave a job like that. I'll leave a job. I don't care because, you know, I just know that the opportunities out there are absolutely endless. And today I'm in a pretty high pressure job. But I'm spiritually able to handle the pressure. When I walked into AA, I never would have considered the type of job I'm in. I would have thought, "Oh my God, no way!" Because I've got so many employees and there's so much responsibility and there's phones ringing and there's emergencies and things are on fire and there's floods and, you know, catastrophes and I work at places where literally, I'm not exaggerating, they have to sweep the bullets off of the sidewalks before you go into the schools in the morning. I'm not exaggerating. I'm saying literally there's a bullet sweeping detail, you know, but I'm living in it's crazy the place that, but I'm okay. I'm spiritually okay. And I'm of service. I'm doing a lot of good in the position that I'm in. And I'm being compensated accordingly. So that inventory, sharing that inventory with my first sponsor, woke me up to the fact that I'm scared to try something new because I'm stuck in predictable day. You know, I know it's a cesspool, but it's my cesspool. You know what I'm saying? So again, these are some of my experiences with the fifth step.
You know, when you get spiritually fit by working the steps and helping others, your whole life changes. I was flying on Jet Airway One on September 14th, 2001. I was one of the first flights back out of Washington, and I was going up, actually Philadelphia. I was going up to Bangor, Maine, and Jet Airway One in the United States brings you past the World Trade Center. And I looked at the World Trade Center smoking there, and I looked at my first officer and I said, "I'm out." And he says, "What do you mean you're out?" I said, I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. And I knew that with my heart of hearts that I hated flying 5 years prior to that. But I was caught up in this money pit thing because airline pilots in the United States get paid very well. And so, he goes, "Did scheduling call you off?" I said, "No, I quit. I'm out." And I left flying. And, you know, the hardest thing for me to get over was not thinking that I wasted 20 years of my life in the airlines. That was the biggest part. And I do today what I dreamed about. But you know what I did first? I wrote out the top 10 things in my most favorite job. I did a job ideal, just like you could do a sex ideal, just like you do a relationship ideal. I wrote out the top 10 things. And you know what? I have every 10 out of 10 that I do today. I'm a public speaker, radio shows. I mean, I got a phenomenal everything on my ideal list I have today because of Alcoholics Anonymous and working these steps. So if you're in something you just totally hate, let's think about that. And there's another question I want to ask you. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact natures of our wrongs. Step 5, right here on the list that you all have been signing up for that you're going to get emailed, okay? In the big book, it says, warnings for skipping the fifth step. There are literally seven warnings if you skip this fifth step. I've seen every one of these come true. Are you ready? Here we go. And it has the page number in the paragraph on the side. I always put that in the big book just to show you that I'm not making this stuff up. Okay? It says, number one, we may not overcome drinking. I've seen people who skip the fifth step. They don't overcome drinking. Number two, we will not learn humility. It's very humbling to do a fifth step to somebody. Number three, we will not learn fearlessness. Number four, we will not learn honesty. Number five, we will be plagued with egoism and fear. Six, we will not expect to live long. And number seven, we will not live happily. If any of those folks has happened to you right now, let's take a serious look at where your sobriety is. I don't care if you have 10 years, 15 years, 2 years, 1 year. If any of that's happening, you're skipping this vital, vital step. And let me explain why that step is so important to you. In the fifth step, it states here. Now, remember in the fourth step, it says, next we launched. So if you don't think that's a time frame, then you're missing the English language of the word launched. Okay? It's immediate. It's next. It's happening. So next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. Now we do the fourth step. Once you write the fourth step, make sure your sponsor doesn't say, well, I'll be home in December. And we'll go over it then. That's not it. Because this is what it says. It says, we have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. What's the word now mean? Now? But there's no time frames in AA. I love when people say that. Really? Well, now these are about ready to be cast out with the fifth step. It says now. So now means, I think now, you go do the fifth step. Okay, so that's why I'm bringing these people through these steps, because as we're writing out the fourth, he's saying the fifth. Do you see what I mean? I'm getting this stuff done. All right. It tells you why you're going to do the fifth step. The best reason first. Well, I guess that's why we're going to do the best reason first why you do the fifth step. This is a big one. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I'll read it again. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Now, there's nine times, I'm getting all my fingers all set up. Nine times, that's nine. Nine times, they're going to make sure that you tell us everything. They're going to make sure of that. Okay? So, now, I'm at my sponsor's house. He's got 4 hours set aside for 22 pages of inventory that I have. He has 4 hours set for me. I walk in, he's got the candles going, he's got this all spiritual thing happening going on. And this guy is a big book thumper. He knows what is happening. He knows I'm scared S-less over this. I am just fearful because even though I didn't write down the thing that happened in Knoxville, Tennessee, right, in 1984, April, I remember the day, everything, and it wasn't a pretty thing. I wasn't going to tell him. It wasn't on my inventory. So he says, let's read a couple things, because I thought he was like reading my mind. He says, so the best reason why we're doing this first is if you leave anything out, you're not going to get overcome drinking. And he goes, and you're not leaving anything out, right? And I'm like, he sees through me. This guy sees through me. How does he know that? No, I'm not leaving anything out. I looked at him with a smile and straight in his eyes. I'm looking at you. No, I didn't leave anything out. Right? He says, okay, cool, let's go. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Number one. He goes, you're not keeping certain facts about your life hidden from me, are you? No. No. No, no, I'm not doing that. Oh, okay. Let's move on. Trying to avoid this humbling experience. You're not trying to avoid this humbling experience by leaving something out. No. And I really wish you would stop asking me. Oh, we're just doing the big book. He goes, we're just doing the big book. I said, okay. He goes, they have turned to easier methods. Are you turning to an easier method by leaving something off? No. No, I'm not. Four times I'm lying to this guy. This is how good I was. He goes, good, because this is what happens if you do. Almost invariably, in English that means almost always, almost invariably they got drunk. And then he pauses for effect. And he says, so you do understand the circumstances. If you leave anything out, which you just told me four times you're not. And I'm like, no. And I'm beating sweat. No, I'm not leaving it. Having persevered with the rest of the program, that means steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, they wondered why they fell. We, meaning the first 100 people who wrote this book, we think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. He looked up just like this. He goes, but you completed your house cleaning because you're not leaving anything off because you just told me four times that. I said, no, I have not left anything out. Five times. I like this guy. He goes, good. All right. He goes, because this is what's going to happen. But they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we, the first 100 people who wrote this book, found it necessary until they told someone else, and he circled the word, all their story. And he says, and you have a book right now, and you're going to tell me all your story, leaving nothing out, because you just told me five times you're leaving nothing out. No, I'm not leaving nothing out. Six times I lied to this guy. He says, good, okay. That was fine. So we're moving on. He says, we must be entirely honest with somebody. And he looks up, and there he goes again. And you're being entirely honest with me. I'm like, yes, I am. Six. He turns his page. He goes, he has to lick his finger and turn the page. All right. Then he comes over here. He says, good, good. Because this is the way it works. And this is the time frame, he said to me. He goes, when we decide is to hear our story, we waste how much time? Well, it says right here. When we decide is to hear our story, we waste no time. No time. How fast is that? That's almost like now, or launched, or next. Something like, but there's no time frames in AA, so don't listen to what this book says. Let's listen to what the oral tradition people say. Like this.
Step a year.
Step a year. Yeah, why couldn't I find that sponsor, Step a Year? I've been searching him out. Take your time. All right, when we decide to hear our story, we waste no time. All right? It says this is a life and death errand in this book. It's a life and death errand. We're not mincing words here. Life and death. So now here we go. We park at our pride and we go to it. Illuminating every twist of character. And he looks up and he says, seven times I have asked you and you have left out nothing, correct? No, I have not. Seven, I lied to him. So now we're going on. He says, okay, so you're eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Every dark cranny in the past? Eight times he's asked me. I said, Craig, if you ask me again, I'm coming over to the table, I'm knocking you out. I'm telling you everything, every dark cranny in the past. So now I'm sitting there, and he says, I'm going to go get a glass of water. So now I'm sitting there like this, and I'm like, you know, the table's like this, the table's moving, my feet are moving, I'm going like this. I mean, I was out of my mind. I only had 90 days of sobriety. And he's shooting me through these steps. My heart's pounding. And so he comes back, he sits down, he goes, okay, let's get this thing going. And then he goes like this. He goes, oh, wait, one other thing. He says, once we have taken the step, withholding nothing. He says, this is your last chance, pal. And he looked at me. He goes, are you withholding anything? And I just looked at him and I went, yes! I am. 1984, Knoxville, Tennessee, April. There was this girl. It always starts off with there's this girl, right? Doesn't it? It's this guy, this girl. Well, me with the girl. And I blurted it out. And then when I was done, I was like, and I was waiting for a movement. Is he going to run away? And he goes, is that it? You made me say nine times you lied to me, eight out of the nine. Is that it? Let me tell you something. And he told me his thing. And I was like, oh, dude, you're sick. I did. And then we went on. And I told him. And he just zipped 22 pages. We did like, you know, nothing, whatever. He says, you are such a normal drunk. Don't worry about it. You're going to be just fine. Except for that thing in Tennessee. But otherwise.
What was that?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you tonight. I'm going to tell that story tonight. Really. It's hugely, immensely, immensely bad. And I will tell you. Right? Either I'm very sick or I'm very healthy. Because I will tell you tonight when you come to this, to hear this story. And it's truly amazing how I made amends. Truly. And if this may be the first time since we're in, you know, the Netherlands and you guys are all so macho and Viking and I'm going to try not to cry, but I always lose it on this story because it changed my life. This was the turning point. So anyway, now it's the fifth step. I'm still atheist. Got it? Follow me? Good. I do this fifth step. He says, okay, now this is what I want you to do. And it says here on page 75, last paragraph, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Does everybody understand what ADD is here? ADD, attention deficit disorder. Yeah, you can't keep a thought for a nanosecond. It's like you have these walls and you have these, the information comes in and then it kind of sorts it out over here and then it goes through the information you need. With me, there's no walls, just all comes in. And that's how I run four companies in the United States, you know what I mean? People are like, you could take a pill for that. I'm like, well, who's going to run all these companies? You know, because I'm always like, bah, 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 like this, in control most of the time. Do you see what I mean?
There is an addictive pill you can take.
There is an addictive pill. I don't want to take it. So anyway, I used to be very ashamed of that, ADD, but it's been my strength. It's been my strength in everything I do, and I'm very proud of it now. I really am. So it says, returning home, you be quiet for an hour. So an hour to a person with ADD is like 2 nanoseconds. You're like, you're constantly looking at the watch. God, that was 30 seconds. I swear it was 30 minutes, right? So I think I lasted, I don't know, it seemed like 50 hours, it was probably 5 minutes. But what I did is I sat there and I contemplated on what I did and what I told this guy, which was a huge, huge thing. I told this guy, when I was done with my 5 minutes of meditation, but when I was done with that, I felt a part of you all. I felt a part of you. I never felt a part of anything, ever, ever, ever. And I finally felt a part of you. You were my family. You were my gang. I knew the handshake. And that was it. Okay? But I still didn't believe in God. Now, that's how thick-headed I was. But I felt great. And I felt proud of myself. And I felt relieved. And a little bit of fear went away. And it says, when I was done, it says here, carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we asked if we have omitted anything. So what I do is I take my sponsees back and I go and I read the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps. And I look at them. Do you believe that you're powerless over alcohol? And when you put alcohol in your body, you have a craving that makes it virtually impossible to stop. They say yes. Well, how was your life when you were drinking? Well, okay, but we got that one done. The next thing is, came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. He asked me that and I said no. He goes, okay, let's start playing this dance again. Will you believe that AA has restored you to sanity to this point? I said, yes. He says, will you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to care of God? I said, no. He says, will you make a decision to finish the rest of the steps? I said, yes. He says, did you make a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself? I said, not fearless, because I was scared when I was making this. And searching a fearless moral inventory of myself, and I had 22 pages. I mean, so you're not getting much more than that. I mean, I just destroyed the world. At least I thought I did. But half of that meant nothing. Half of that really meant nothing. More than half of that meant nothing. And then he says, well, you just admitted to God, to yourself, and to another human being the exact nature of your wrong. Now, go home for 1 hour, sit quietly, and thank God from the bottom of your heart that you know him better. I said, okay. He says, now check this out. If we answer to our satisfaction, so they're going to ask you 3 questions in this 5th step. Question number 1, and it goes like this. It says, is our work solid so far? And he said, yeah, I believe we are. Are the stones properly in place? And I said, yeah, I believe they are. Have we skimped on the cement, put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar out of sand? And then it states this on the next page. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we, time frame, then. We then. What's then mean? We then, we next, we now, we immediately, we then look at step 6. Okay? There's another time frame. I'm going to show you time frames through this whole book. So the next time you go to a meeting, and I tell my sponsors this, I said, don't start going to meetings quoting the big book. You know, people are going to say something, you're going to raise your hand. That's not true. That Doug tells me, you know, I'm not well liked as it is in AA rooms over in America. So let's just keep it kind of hush hush until you get some time under your belt. Then you can quote all you want. I can really care less. But then it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, which I just did, we then look at step 6. And in step 6, when Chris and I, when you come back from this break, is it at 3:30, the break? 3:30? That's where we got time. Then what I did is I got a sheet for y'all. Every character defects known to man on 2 sheets, or woman. If I was to look at this here. Okay? So I have every character defect, which I would like you all to fill out. Just put a little check mark to who you think you are and what you think you are. I got 62 of them, so don't worry about it. I think I'm down to like 30. And then just write a little blurb why you think you're selfish, why you think you're dishonest, why you think you're resentful. Now, if I was a typical AA, I would just leave all through character defects, correct? We could beat ourselves up, can't we? But the trick is, if you love yourself, which I believe we do, I also put the opposite of it on the other side. So that now you have something to strive for. I believe in visualization. I started a restaurant. Chris came to it. It's very big and very beautiful. And it's in Charlottesville, Virginia. And it's an Amtrak train station. The Amtrak train station, which is a big train station in the United States, was a crack house. It was abandoned. And I believed I could make that all beautiful. And I took a picture of it and I hung it up. And I said, I will have a nightclub. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to have a nightclub restaurant in there. And 3 years later, I did. Because, and I never even worked in a restaurant. And it's doing very well 7 years later. But that's another part of my story. It took a bump there, and I was in Chris's house when it took that bump. And he looked at me, he goes, wow, you know. It was totally amazing. I made it through without drinking. So anyway, what I'm getting at is that look at the other side. Look at the greatness in yourself. All right? So Chris is going to go, you can finish up 6 and 7 like that. Knock it out.
I probably can. All right, step 6. We've just inventoried a whole bunch of our character defects in step 4. We've written out a whole lot. You know, we've kind of identified a lot about our failure in life. There's places in both the big book and the step book, though, that gives us a warning. And they basically say a self-appraisal is seldom sufficient. What do they mean by that? Well, as an alcoholic, I want to write down, I want to keep control over this inventory. I want to keep my defects down to the minimum. I mean, sometimes we exert undue influence on this process because that's just the way our egos are. Now, but a self-appraisal is going to be insufficient. That's really where we get the help from a sponsor on a fifth step. The sponsor is going to give feedback. The sponsor is going to point out some traits. The sponsor is going to call you on it if you're not being honest with, say, column 4 in the resentment inventory, or if you haven't gone into enough detail in the sex harms. So they're going to help you with understanding a little bit about your own character defects. So by the time you get to step 6, you're going to understand a little bit more about your character defects. Now, we don't want to know what our character defects are. And I can prove that by giving you all an exercise. Before you come back tomorrow morning, go to the 5 people that know you most in this world and ask them to write down 10 character defects that show up in you and how annoying they are. Okay? Now, I can prove that you don't even want to know what your character defects are because few, if any, of you are going to run off and do that exercise. We don't want to know what our character defects are. Let's keep this to a minimum. Now, this is where a really good sponsor or spiritual advisor is going to help you. You know, pointing out some of these character defects, showing you where you show up in life. Now, in this book, it also goes over that if you're of the religious persuasion where you know, you're supposed to do confession, that's supposed to be part of this too. I would suggest that you do that as well as, not instead of. You know, if you're Catholic, you're being told in this book to share this inventory with the priest. I'd also get an alcoholic sponsor or spiritual advisor and share it with them too. Because the instructions in here are person or persons who you are going to share this with. So it's opening up the door for us to share it with more than one person. I've found multiply sharing inventories with different people is beneficial to me because of the different feedback that I get. Now, in a confessional atmosphere, now I'm not Catholic, but I kind of get the idea. You know, you'll, as you're sharing this stuff, you'll get a lot of, go on, my son. Very rarely will you get, oh, you play with yourself like that? I do that too. You know what I mean? You're just not going to get that from the clergyman. So it's helpful, I believe, to do this with a sponsor or spiritual advisor, someone with experience with this. Now, Again, our defects of character are what block us off from God, from our fellow man, and from an effective life, from a quality life. We need to take this seriously. We need to become willing to have these defects of character removed. Now, are we going to be 100% willing to have every single defect of character removed right then and there? Probably not, if we're honest with ourselves. What about lust? You want to have that completely removed? I don't know about you, but I'm putting the brakes on there. You know what I'm saying? Let's hold on a minute. You know, let's not overreact. It's only alcoholism, you know? So what I'm saying is there's a prayer directive in here for anything we're unwilling to let go of. I know a lot of people, I sponsor a lot of Wall Street monsters, you know, and they'll say, I understand all these defects of character things, but I work on Wall Street. I'm in sales. You know, I can't turn all this over to God. I need to keep my edge. And, they're just not understanding just how powerful this spiritual process is. This is going to make you a better salesman. You're going to change the way you operate. You're going to be more interested in what you can offer to your client than what you can get yourself. That's going to translate into a better client sales relationship, and you're going to get more business, and you're going to be trusted more, and you're going to get a better reputation. So a lot of times we're afraid of things that we shouldn't be afraid of. The spiritual life is not a theory. We must live it. So we really need to be willing to have God remove these defects of character. If we're not willing, there's a prayer directive to God. Please allow me to be willing to remove the character defects that are keeping me from, you know, living a spiritual life, even though I think I need to hang on to them to keep my edge, or, you know, whatever excuse we're using. Now, when we get to a point like this, this is something that should be done the same day as the fifth step, by the way, these steps. So really there's a momentum that's necessary. As you're going through this step process, there's a momentum that's necessary to keep going. It's very, very easy to let our egos talk us into balking, you know. And if you stop after step five and you don't move on, it's very, very difficult after a period of time to get into step eight and step nine. There's a momentum that needs to be maintained when going through these steps. You know what I mean? They should be done fairly quickly. I'm not saying that they absolutely have to be done in a certain amount of time, but you can't lose the momentum. You can't lose. If you lose the momentum, you're going to rest on your laurels and find that you're in a lot of trouble. You'll have done a whole bunch of work in it. Because half measures avail you what?
Nothing.
And nothing is?
Nothing.
A lot less than that.
America, it's forget about it.
Nothing is not even a lot.
Tony Soprano. Do you all get the Sopranos here? Forget about it.
That's what it is. So you need to move on. Now, humility is something that Bill wrote a lot on in the step book. I believe that after another 14 or so years sobriety, Bill was really understanding the need for a type of humility. I'll bet you everyone in here when it came time, well, I can't say that. I'll bet you most of the people in here, when it came time to get away from alcohol, you'd been humbled by alcohol. You'd been humbled by alcohol. You got in a ring with it every single time, and it knocked you out. Okay? He's basically, in the step book, he started talking about, if we can approach our character defects with this kind of humility and go to God and say, you know, this selfishness, it's killing me. I can't be selfish like this anymore. Please help me. Please help me. If we can go with that kind of desperation and that kind of humility, that it's much easier for these defects to become under control. It's much easier for God to remove these defects of character. Now, I've heard people who I respect a lot say things like this. Step six is not doing what you want to do, and step seven is doing what you don't want to do. Now that would be all well and fine if I had, you know, if I had any power over this. I mean, you know, if I could have changed my character defects, I would have done a better job a long time ago. I was caught up in the character defects because they were part of my alcoholism, and my alcoholism was part of my character defects, and it was one big stew of a mess. Now, some of these things, I wish I could just turn the switch off, and you know what? From now on, I'm never going to be selfish again. Give me that, you know? That's mine. I mean, it lasts about 4 seconds. So if Bill Wilson wanted us to stop engaging in our character defects, step six would be became willing to never do anything wrong again. And step seven would be very, very grateful that you're not doing anything wrong ever again. I mean, you know. But that's not what the steps say. The steps say you need God. You need the power of God. If you were bigger than your character defects, you wouldn't need God's help. And I believe I need God's help with the character defects. And I also believe that I can remain willing. I'm going to stop with this. What is the best spiritual atmosphere to be in for the removal of your character defects? If you've done a four-step and a fifth-step, you do want character defects removed. Maybe not all of them, but you'll want most of them removed because you've recognized that they're a big problem. What's the best spiritual climate or spiritual atmosphere to be in for the removal of the character defects? I'll lead into this to the next session by saying this. The best spiritual climate to be in for the removal of character defects is to become willing to have them removed, ask God to remove them, and then become willing to make amends where these character defects have caused harm, and then to actually go out and make amends for the harms these character defects have caused. That's the best possible climate to be in. That's doing your job, and then it's God's job to have these defects of character removed from your life. That's what I believe.
Step 6 and 7 states this. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7, humbly, and I don't know if you all knew this, but in the first writing of the big book, it said humbly upon our knees. But there's some religions that don't allow you to get to your knees, so we remove that. So whoever says that there hasn't been changes in the first 164 has not studied the history. So it says humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Then you come back to the page and it says here, if we were to answer to our satisfaction, we then, which is a time frame, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are you, and I ask these questions, I look at the sponsee, and I say, are you now ready to have God remove from you all the things which you have admitted are objectionable? And I wait for an answer. And then, can he now take all of them, everyone? And I wait for an answer. And here's a prayer. If we still cling to something we do not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. When ready, we say something like this. And I'd like all to pause for a minute, and then I would like to read the 7-step prayer to you. If you'd like to join in, that'd be wonderful.